Assess Mat Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
It's good Monday. Thanks for being with us. We are really into today's show on a sad note, obviously, with the passing of Muhammad Ali. But I think there's a lot to get to here in Phoenix because this was Muhammad's second home. Louisville, his first. That's where the service will be this coming Friday. Norm Fraunheim is going to be with us at about 10:20. Norm is one of the best kept secrets in not just Valley media, but in Arizona media. I say he's a secret. It sounds like, you know, people don't pay attention to him. That's not the case. It's Norm forever covered Muhammad for the Arizona Republic, and then business changed and Norm moved on and the paper moved on. And Norm is somebody that I have an enormous amount of respect for, not just on the subject of Muhammad Ali, but just in general as a journalist. And he'll be with us to talk about the champ, and I think we'll both kind of wax here a little bit about Muhammad. I put up a column on Facebook and on the website over the weekend on Friday night, actually, when it was very apparent from what I was hearing that it wasn't going to work out and that the end was near. I went back and found some pictures of times that I'd spent with Muhammad Ali in the Valley doing charity events and just being at places with him and wrote a bit about it. It's not like I knew him inside and out, but I was blessed and fortunate enough to have spent some time with him here in Phoenix. So we'll go through that with Norm Fraunheim. Paula's going to be with us. Paula Bovin, AZ Central sports columnist and friend. We'll talk with Paula about Muhammad because I'm sure she had some bumps with him as well at events in the Valley. I think, too, with Paula, last night, I had a terrific time last night. I was asked to MC the Arizona Sports Awards by AZ Central Sports. It had a lot of fun. It was one of those cool events. When you get asked to do events, sometimes you're sitting there in midstream saying, get me out of here. Get me off the stage. This is just a disaster, and I want to get over with. The people that say, here is the script, and it will take us about, an hour and 20 minutes. And you open it up and you say, no, this is going to take 3 hours. And most of the room is going to just take a pen to their eye and gouge it out because this script is forever. That was not the case last night. And very well done, very professional. And it was cool. It was an event for high school participants. I'm looking for like high school seniors. But now it was all grades. And Dan Bickley interviewed Carson Palmer and Scott Bordeaux and Richard Obert and Sarah McClellan were on the stage with me. And it was just a really nice high-end event. And it was cool to see because forever, as I've been doing this, you run across the people like, well, you can make millions off of high school kids. Well, no, that was not what last night was about. It was a nice event. It was at the Orpheum. I've never emceed an event at the Orpheum. I've been to the Orpheum. So I'm standing there on the stage of this really cool venue yesterday afternoon when we're rehearsing. Like, all right, this is good. I got this. So talk to Paula about that. And Kurt Warner went on Twitter yesterday. I want to get Paula's view on. So Kurt was down at the U of A football camp. It was like a camp down there, passing league, whatever. And his son was not getting the football, and Kurt went to Twitter about it. And I think you can look at it both ways because I've had more response on that on anything else other than the passing of Muhammad Ali. When that came out yesterday, all of a sudden I got, can you believe that he's doing this? Well, you know, sometimes you want to just say back away from the phone. And then there's other times where, well, he's got a point here. He's got a platform where he can raise the issue that these camps that people pay lots of money to aren't always done the right way. And I think you can look at it from both sides on that. So today is also a Michigan, Alabama are working the same satellite camp today in Baltimore. So it may be a little story to you, but gosh, if you're not a college football fan, you would find some real entertainment in watching Jim Harbaugh and Nick Saban go back and forth. And the two programs today are in Baltimore at the same facility, the same field, working out kids today together. So, as the day progresses, that's going to become one of the leading sports stories of the day. And it may end up being the top sports story of the day nationally. We'll just see on that. The Suns here locally have Jaylen Brown coming in to work out today. Now, Jaylen Brown is somebody that He's intriguing to me in the way that you watch him play. Jared Cohen sent me a little note this morning. Jared does a great job in watching the college games, as do I, and I agree with him. He's got a little bit of Shabazz Muhammad in him. You guys know through the years I had this crush, this man crush on Shabazz Muhammad. He hasn't turned out, okay? If I'm the general manager, I would have fired myself by now. But Jaylen Brown's also an underclassman. He's really raw. Fourth overall pick, third overall pick. You know, you start going through the top three, top four, top five players. And really, in this year's class, is it Jaylen Brown? So he's working out with the Suns today. And I think that's probably the biggest sports story locally going on in the Valley today. Watched the finals this morning. Watched it back. I was emceeing the event last night. Draymond Green was clearly the MVP of the game. Draymond Green's been the MVP of the series. You may really hate him because he kicks up. You may really like him. I'm somewhere in between. I like his energy. I think there's times where he becomes distracted and looks like a pouty little dude out on the court. I don't like that. Seems to me there are times where he doesn't let the game go away. He's got some Rodman in him, guys. Draymond Green has got some Rodman in him. He can get into the other team's head. He's going to do some of the dirty stuff, but he's a much more fluid basketball player. You put him out top, Rodman could never shoot a three. When I talk about Green and Rodman, it's pretty much down in the low post, down in the low block. And just the general, there's a little bit of a grit to him. There's some jagged edges, which I think every sports team needs to have one or two of those guys in basketball. If it's a baseball team, you have to have, I don't know, four or five of those guys, just some odd, not the same dudes. In football, you can have, I don't know, a half dozen. You can have maybe even more than that if it's managed properly in the locker room. But what's come to me in this NBA Finals so far, when I see J.R. Smith of Cleveland say, the Warriors want it more than we do. Well, here's the bottom line. Nothing's really changed in this series. All Golden State has done is win the first two games on their home court, which is how it works. That's how it works. You're supposed to win at home. LeBron is healthy. Kyrie is healthy. And they're getting crushed. So now Kevin Love gets a concussion. He's in the concussion protocol with the Harrison Barnes elbow. I didn't think that was a dirty play myself. But the bottom line is, yeah, Cleveland's in a lot of trouble. That's one thing. But LeBron's just getting crushed today, just destroyed, because he's supposed to be the best player on the planet. And there's this magnetic personality to LeBron, some positive, some negative. There's some people that will never, ever like him. And they're reveling in the fact. Like when Jordan was at his height, I don't sense there was ever the, boy, it's great to see him screw up, or it's great to see him down. I never sense that. Kobe, if you were the team that was opposing Kobe, sure, fans would hate on him. And there'd be some that would never want to see Kobe Bryant do well. This guy, it's at a completely different level. The people that are in LeBron James' corner are the people getting shouted down saying, his team blows so far. His team is getting destroyed. So if he is truly the best player on the planet and this year Kyrie's healthy, that's not an excuse. And Kevin Love was healthy in the first game. And then you have J.R. Smith saying the Warriors want it more than we do. And that's pretty strong stuff. But again, it's two games. And so far, what is supposed to have happened in the series has happened. Home court has taken hold. Warriors win in the Bay Area. Series shifts on Wednesday and Friday to Cleveland. And I think this game, the series is going to go seven. It's just because in the first two games, Cleveland has looked horrendous. The fire Dave Griffin, LeBron is over. All that stuff is out there. And I don't buy it. There's a couple other things caught my eye over the weekend. So Jordy's in for Eric today because Eric is on the more vacation days in the calendar year than work days.
I say again, must be nice.
Must be nice. Why is it you didn't negotiate that deal with, you know, I mean, when you and I sat and agreed on something, you should have had Eric as your agent.
But really, the man is never here, and it's impressive. I'm not even mad about it. I'm impressed.
Well, are you taking any days off this month?
I'm taking a few.
What's a few? How many is it?
Probably four or five.
Four or five. Today is the sixth. So you're taking four or five. You're not even sure. How many days off last month did you take?
Probably four or five.
Four or five last month. So the audience that is at work sitting in their cubicle is thinking, well, sure, I always have 4-day work weeks if I average it out. I always have 4 or 5 days off. I don't know, Jordy. I think you should take 10 days off. Why not?
You're rowing this canoe, so I'm not going to say no.
And I've heard Iron Man is finally taking some. Jared Nielsen is finally taking some days off. The man is finally getting a life. He's never taken a day off since we started this. It's like 3 years, coming up on 3 years. He's never taken one day off. I'm more than happy to give him a day off. It's just we wouldn't get on the air. So, but that's changing. It's fine. So you're out at the, let's go into this. You're at the Uruguay-Mexico match last night. Now, I'm emceeing the thing downtown, so I'm not paying attention, but I get into my car before I start up to go home from the Orpheum. I just open up Twitter really quick to make sure I miss anything, and I'm seeing this wrong anthem, wrong anthem, wrong anthem. So you're there last night. There's 60,000 fans out in Glendale, right? This is not a fabricated number.
There was quite a show, and especially obviously from the Mexico side. But yeah, there were a lot of people at that event last night.
Okay, so El Trey has got everybody excited. Juan Carlos Osorio is the coach. They're playing well. But before the match starts, they have the two national anthems. This is how I've read the story and how it took place. Do you understand that when the Uruguay national anthem is being played, I shouldn't laugh, that it was the wrong anthem? Did you know that when you were standing there?
I didn't know at the time.
Okay.
You know, I wasn't really paying it too much attention to the songs. You know, I was taking photos, so I was trying to be respectful, be, you know, reverent to that, but also, you know, looking in the crowd, seeing if there could be some good photos I could subtly take and that sort of thing. But I didn't really find out until about 20 minutes after that they had played the incorrect one. And now that kind of makes sense because the Mexican national anthem, the crowd is going wild. Obviously, I thought it was just much louder because there were more people there, but yeah, there weren't really anybody on the Uruguay side singing, and they looked a little more focused. And I didn't really chalk it up to anything, but I think it's because they were trying to figure out what exactly was being played when it should have been their national anthem.
So you're down on the field.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so you're down on the field for both anthems. Now, my understanding is the Mexico fans booed the anthem for Uruguay, which actually ended up being the Chilean national anthem that they played rather than Uruguay. So somebody upstairs opens up their computer and says, national anthem, national anthem, we're going to do Chile's. They drag it into a little folder and it's there on their laptop and they just push play. Meantime, they're going to go down. They're going to get their salad, their sandwich. They didn't know.
Mm-hmm.
And so was there booing from the fans? Cause that's, I don't know. I find that to be wrong, that fans should never boo another country's anthem, in my opinion. Even if it's the wrong anthem, they shouldn't boo.
Yeah, you know, I didn't see or hear a ton of that, but also kind of from my vantage point, it was just all kind of noise coming to the field and
sure,
that sort of thing. So I didn't really take it as that. It might have, I thought it was more kind of cheering carryover into the second national anthem.
So I've been one of those, Jordan, and I don't know. I've had people debate me on this. The national anthem is played at all sporting events. Mm-hmm. And there are times where I've seen it through doing this gig for years and years and years where it's nothing more than Star Search. It's nothing more than a platform for somebody to go out there and get their demo tape together. And I find it insulting. I know you've got to play the national anthem, but gosh almighty, when you have – how do you screw it up? And like the one a few weeks ago in San Diego, that one got screwed up. I was at Roseanne Barr years ago. That got screwed up. I've seen people forget the words. I've seen people that haven't been able to get through the song. Just all sorts of butchering. But to have an event of this magnitude and the wrong anthem gets played and it's right here in our own backyard, caught my eye. So leave it at that. All right, Norm Fraunheim is next. We're going to have Norm on Norm, of course, covers the sport, the sweet sport of boxing, and is a longtime Valley fixture in the boxing scene, also nationally. Norm Fraunheim, he's on the other side. Then Paula Bovin, News and Notes with Paula Bovin from AZ Central Sports. That's next on a Monday. A little bit later, we're going to talk about this journalist, like the Peter King and Adam Schefter of UFC, got thrown out of a match because he reported something ahead of time. So I thought Archie Bradley was pretty good over the weekend with the Diamondbacks. Arizona lands a quarterback and Kurt Warner on Twitter. That's all straight ahead, too. I'm Brad Sussmat. Friday, the passing of Muhammad Ali. And as I was going through Friday night and getting some old pictures together and putting my thoughts together, one of the first people I thought of was Norm Fraunheim, our next guest. 15rounds.com is where Norm is. Norm for years was with the Arizona Republic, and in my opinion is one of the real treasures in the sport of boxing, but just in terms of journalism in the Valley, not just even with boxing, but that's what I've known Norm to do, along with other great work. He joins us for a few minutes here on Monday Show, sports360az.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. What were your initial thoughts when you heard that he had passed away, Norm?
By the way, thanks for the kind words. I had a mixed reaction, and I'll tell you why. You and I have witnessed this for years. And it pulled at your heart to watch Muhammad Ali over the years with his Parkinson's, and I think all of us mourn his passing, but I think it also comes with a sense of relief for his family.
No, I would agree with you. There are times where you and I would look at one another when we were at events like,
yeah,
Champ does not look good today, and those were happening more frequently. And yeah, I want to go to happier times with him. Your first dealings with Muhammad Ali, do you remember them?
I do. I ran into him. You know, he would come through the Valley, and he was playful. And I can remember writing a story on him on his 50th birthday, and Angelo Dundee was down in Tucson, Fort Huachuca, working with the U.S. Olympic team, and at that point, you could tell that, you know, things weren't exactly right, but he was still playful. He'd do the magic tricks. He'd whisper in your ear. I mean, even when he first moved here and the decline had set in, he would, you know, he came to see Gary Hall, the former Olympic swimmer from here, and I remember he would Gary looked at me and he said, because he did his whole deal where he'd reach behind you and whisper in your ear, like, and tell you, so you sure look stupid, you know. and that was, you know, that was always Ali. The thing that strikes me about all this, I have my personal memories go all the way back to when I was a kid with my dad when he was in Vietnam, and I had mixed feelings, and I used to argue with my father about Ali, because my father hated Ali, but he seemed to change his mind when he came back from Vietnam. I mean, he had fought in several wars, and when he came back from Vietnam, I could tell that Vietnam had affected him. I don't think he ever became an Ali fan, but I think he grew to respect him. What strikes me about the last few days is how Ali affected people, and each and every person he seems to have affected in a personal way. And I don't know who else you can say that about. And it's really kind of extraordinary.
Talking with Norm Fraunheim, why do you think that was? Why do you think he affected people? Because here's my thing. I've got kids that are in their early 20s, and they want to know what all the hubbub is about. But they had heard of Muhammad Ali. And right. I don't know if that was through things that I had done, you know, we've done together in covering him, but they're aware of him. But why was it he was able to transcend so many generations?
I think he had a very unique personal touch. You know, in some way, he was able to communicate with his eyes, you know, when he was younger, with his his which was at the time was unprecedented braggadocio. And then, you know, when he was silenced by Parkinson, he still was able to communicate with you with his eyes and his friendliness. Despite the fact that there, I think as a fighter, he had a cruel streak, but he was a fighter after all, and to be a great fighter, I think you have to have some of that. But that said, when he got older, as is true with so many fighters, that was gone, and in its place was a very gentle streak. I say this, and because the one person out there that you can really tell the effect on is George Foreman. Now, George Foreman was, I think, sort of the Mike Tyson of his time. You know, he'll admit this to you. You know, where he used to run the streets. I think it was of the Fifth Ward in Houston. You know, rob old women, and then when they had that great fight in Zaire. It destroyed George for a while, but George has become this gentle gentleman and a great American, by the way. And if you talk to George now, he will tell you that it was because of what happened in his relationship with Muhammad Ali, which is an extraordinary story, in my opinion. That said, the other side of that coin is Joe Frazier, but I do think that Frazier, unfortunately, Frazier died before Ali and Joe could you know at least make it public that they had gotten over their differences. I think they were moving in that direction, and I know that Muhammad was at Joe's funeral after he had died from liver cancer.
Norm Fraunheit.
You know, the other story, going back to the Vietnam angle, and this one amazes me, and I've yet to see this one mentioned, and it has a very local angle. But there's Senator John McCain, you know, a great Vietnam vet, a war hero for his time in the Hanoi Hilton as a prisoner of war, and those guys you would think have probably a legitimate right to dislike Muhammad's stand against the Vietnam War. Yet Senator McCain in his boxing legislation named his bill, his senatorial bill, after Muhammad Ali, the Muhammad Ali Act. So, I mean, there's been, over the years, this amazing ability for Ali to make amends, to become friends, allies with people who were his enemies, who he was a great rival with. It's a sort of an extraordinary story of one man's journey through life.
Norm Fraunheim, 15rounds.com. When you covered the Suns, which you did, and Muhammad would come to games and make that entrance through the tunnel with Jimmy Walker, and it wouldn't just be a few people. It would be the entire place.
Right.
Did that ever hit you right between the eyes? Like, what is going on here?
Well, you know, in retrospect, and you look back on it, but he had, you know, I've heard him described. Larry Merchant the other day described him as a uniquely American personality, and said he was like Mark Twain with, in fact, I'm writing all of this in this right now as we speak.
Good.
In this long retrospective for the Ring magazine, who I also worked for. But he called him Mark Twain with boxing gloves on. And I found that it made me laugh, but there is some truth to it, you know, with his poetry and just his ability to communicate, you know, and I, you know, if you look at sports from our standpoint, I always thought that there were elements of Ali in Charles Barkley.
Yep, no question. There's no question that Charles had to have studied him. Had to have.
I mean, it was either by osmosis or, you know, I look at Charles now, and if you look at Charles' eyes, you know, from just that portion of his face, he has the same sort of eyes, the playful, very alert eyes, very bright eyes that Ali had, especially as a young man.
Before you go, are you going to Louisville for the service?
I may go. I've been invited to go, but I have to get this. I've been so busy doing all of this for the ring. I have to get this out within the next few days. So I don't know that I will, but I'll surely be watching it on TV. What's your best memory of him, by the way?
He and I were together. Gosh, there's many of them. So Bicycle for Kids.
Right.
He snuck in. They put him in the tent. You've been to that event. I count the kids down. There's like 300 kids, and they raise the white tent up, and the kids see these bikes, these shiny bikes with a living Bible and a helmet, and they all run to the bikes, and all the parents ran to the champ, and the champ had this look on his face like, oh, my gosh, I'm going to get run over. Jason Kidd and I one time emceed a luncheon, and – it was for fight night. It was for some of their donors, like 50 people at the Ritz-Carlton. And I introduced him as to Jason, and Champ got up very slowly. He was not having a good day. And I walked over to help him up on stage, and he slapped my hand away, Norm. And he took his finger and he slowly went back and forth in a no, you don't help me on stage fashion. And he slowly took a step and got up on stage, and he reached into his coat pocket and he pulled out the deck of cards. And he slowly did the deck of cards trick, and there wasn't a dry eye in the house. It was like 50 sponsors. Yeah. He came into the Diamondbacks locker room once, and four games.
There's one for a few of those as well.
Yeah, and you see these baseball players suddenly turn to goo. They didn't know what to do. They just slowly walk over there, and I went and sat with him for like 5-6 innings. Jimmy Walker was there with us, and Jimmy took off. So I'm just sitting there with Muhammad Ali, and he puts his hand on my shoulder. And I said, do you enjoy your time with Jimmy Walker? And he took his finger and made a circular motion around his ears and said, it's crazy. And laughed, you know. I mean, there's all sorts of those things that had nothing at all to do with boxing. And I was like you on Friday night, though. It was one of those where through the years you just felt like, wow, this is hard. This is really hard for him, and he's doing his best to accommodate everybody else.
Yeah,
I don't want to be that guy.
It struck me that he planned his own funeral. Now, that means to me that he knew this was imminent and something maybe, you know. Well, I mean, I don't know if it was conscious or unconscious, but he was always his own person, and you know, this was the moment, and it was time to go, and it didn't, you know, but just kind of an extraordinary life. There was no athlete or no person that I've ever been around like him. So you know, God bless him, and my prayers go to his family.
Good visiting with you. Get back to writing that piece. Really look forward to seeing it. It'll be on the Ring website.
Yeah, the Ring magazine. Yeah, I'm doing a large retrospective on him. So
sounds great, Norm. Appreciate the time as always. Thanks.
All right. Thank you, Brad. Take care.
It's Norm Fraunheim with us. 15rounds.com and the Ring magazine. Whew. Yeah, the John McCain part. That is really, really good. Paula is next. Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Always good to visit with Paula. That is on the other side. I'm Brad Sussmat.
Giving you the inside slant on the weekend's biggest stories. It's time for News and Notes with AZ Central sports columnist Paula Bovin. Here again, Brad Sussmat.
Always good to catch up with Paula Bovin, News and Notes, AZ Central sports columnist. I just finished a very strong segment with Norm Fraunheim on the passing of Muhammad Ali, and I'm going to turn it to you now. Your recollections of Muhammad and your dealings with Muhammad Ali and covering him here in the Valley through the years, Paula?
You know, for me, it's just a matter of he was a guy, even when I was younger, it was so rare to have an athlete who was socially aware and was willing to put himself out there and was judged by so many people, some very negatively. And I remember that even when I was younger, that just left a sort of a profound, you know, feeling with me, because so many athletes were afraid to do that. And the ones that did, you know, faced some really ugly repercussions. So that's what I've always thought of most. And then just how much he was a sports fan. I mean, I would see him at Mercury games all the time, and, you know, it's not something that a lot of celebrities will do, and I just love that about him.
So you and I, of course, worked out in on the West Coast before we came here to Phoenix, and I'm curious, right, when you were out in L.A. writing and doing media versus when you came here to Phoenix and you got to see him and know him, did you find him to be different than what you expected? Did you find him to be more in line of what you thought he was going to be like? I'm just curious, from L.A. to here, when you covered him from abroad, then up close.
What surprised me about him is how sweet he was in person and asked questions about me. That always strikes me when you're interviewing somebody, because, you know, people just usually aren't that interested in the reporter, and I totally get that. But just that there was such a sort of sweet, gentle nature about him. He loved talking about his children. There was certainly the bravado, that facade we saw, the thing that helped him succeed in the ring. But there was this totally other, you know, beyond the guy who spoke about social issues, beyond the humanitarian, which he was such a great one. He was just a really, really sweet person, at least the moments that I had been around him.
Okay, who is the modern day Muhammad Ali to you? Is it just simply Charles and that's it, or are there other people?
I'm sorry, Brad, you cut out. Could you repeat that?
No, sure. The modern day Muhammad Ali, in my view, mm-hmm. it's Charles. Are there others, or is it just him?
Oh, gosh, I don't know. It, you know, this is such a society of professional athletes who are afraid to use their platform. I think of Tiger Woods, and I think of Michael Jordan, and how so afraid they were to offend anybody. I think Charles is actually a great example, Brad. I hadn't even thought of that, but, you know, there are a few like him. I think Steve Nash, in his own manner, was a guy who was willing to tackle issues. You know, he liked to talk about himself as a citizen of the world. I mean, he had a very different way of going about things as far as getting your point across and all that, the way maybe Ali did, but I think he had that in him. Nash had a little of that too, you know, of not being afraid of the world getting on his case.
I'm talking with Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. So the Suns have Jaylen Brown in today, switching gears as delicately as we can from that subject. Jaylen Brown, this high up in the draft, I know that, man, that's hard for me to grasp him. What's your sense on Brown and this, where the Suns are? Because we're 3 weeks away now from the draft taking place.
Well, I just think because they have more than one, you know, pretty high pick, I think there's a lot of ways they can go with it. I think they have flexibility, and that's exciting. And you know, it was taking someone like that and taking someone who people talk about having all this potential and, you know, maybe not contribute right away, but the upside, and then going with someone who's a little older and a little more polished too. I mean, I love that they've got this sort of mix and match capability. I hope they don't screw it up. You know, I'm not suggesting they will, but it's been a long, long road with this organization and the lack of, you know, the playoffs and everything else. So I think there's just such great opportunity for them, Brad, to get things right in this draft. And, you know, this is where we're going to judge the McDonough era more than anything. You know, there's been some things we've been able to judge early on. But this one, to me, this draft will tell us the whole story.
There's a lot of little things going on in town, but they're things. What is it that is catching your eye right now?
You know, I'm probably in the minority, but the Diamondbacks, it's just interesting to me that they're kind of creeping back into the relevance picture. And I'm not saying they're going to catch anybody and get in the postseason, but what seemed like such a disaster is maybe not going to be a disaster. And I know, you know, and it's their own fault. I mean, they had as much to do with pumping things up this season as anybody, but they've also talked about a plan of a couple of years, and I know fans hate that, but what you see is starting to happening with their pitching is encouraging. I even went out to Shelby Miller through an extended spring training down in Mesa this week, and I went down and watched him and talked to him a little bit, and there's even an air of sort of he seems like he's in a better place. So, you know, the Diamondbacks story to me is interesting because if they don't figure this out and if the pitching isn't pitching is not doing what it's doing now, which I think is actually taking a very positive turn. I mean, their struggles are really bad. So I think this season is, they need the things for things to start really, really turning around. And I feel like that's happening with the pitching. But I know a lot of people right now don't care. They've been certainly emailing me often about it.
Sure. No, and I'm hearing it too, that, you know, fire chip and everything's going to turn around. I just don't think that's the right way to go. Right. You decided to go out on a limb. No, actually, not a limb. You went out on the entire tree to admit that you don't like the Chicago Cubs. And you're a White Sox fan. And I admire the fact that you just want to get abused in that way, because your inbox has to have just been really, really ugly the last couple of days. Am I right on this after you put that out there?
Yes. It's funny. It's the most mail I've received in a long time. And actually, there's a lot more positive in there than I expected, because there are so many White Sox fans you just don't realize, because they're definitely overshadowed by the Cubs fans in town. So there was a lot of that. And then, you know, there were a lot of Cub fans who kind of got it. I mean, they understand the rivalry. They understand I was having a little fun with it, but they also understand my roots, and I, you know, just can't root for the Cubs. It's so, so hard. And so, yeah, but there were some people who were really offended that I got a lot of that's really below you, Paula. You know, you don't do this kind of thing.
Come on.
And I don't regret it.
I needed
to do it. It was just something I had to do.
Therapeutic. Jeez, this is This is not brain surgery. It's sports. Did you see Kurt Warner's little Twitter thing yesterday?
I did not. I'm sorry. Oh. What did he do or didn't do?
He went on Twitter to complain about his son not being thrown to or being given one-on-one reps at U of A's football camp. Put it on Twitter.
Ooh.
Hashtag bear letdown.
Wow.
So, yeah, there's times where you just want to say back away from the phone. You know, put it down. Don't do it. Don't. Oh, he did it.
He did it.
So that caught my eye over the weekend. And then I didn't see you at the Arizona Sports Awards last night.
But I saw you. I watched you, Brad. You were terrific, and I thought the awards were terrific. I wish badly I could have been a part of it, because I thought it was great. I already had a conflict I couldn't change last night. But I thought it was a great event, and I think this is a great thing to build off too. I can just see this being really significant as well down the road. What did you think of the whole production?
Well, did you see it from the start?
Yeah, I saw almost all of it.
You didn't see where I almost face planted off the beginning? It was beautiful.
No, so, that part I missed.
Oh, it was great. So the producers are like, you know, they don't know me from Adam because they're from out of town. They roll in, and I said, I'm going to screw around and have fun because these are kids. I've had high school kids. So they have this sign off to the side that has AZ Central and the sponsor. And I said, I'll duck behind the sign when they do the big voice. Here's Brad Susmat. And then I'll poke over the top, the whole height thing. That'll get a laugh. And it did. Thing is, as I sprinted from that across the stage, and just to my left were these big canned lights that were like magenta and yellow pointing up. And my left foot, as I sprinted out there, tipped one of them. So I almost face planted. No, but it was great because I got a laugh. And then people afterwards were like, oh, that was so funny that you put that together. You hid and then you pretended you tripped. No, I didn't pretend. It's nice.
But it looked like it was staged. That's even better.
But no, it was, I told Mark Fowler and I told the people at AZ Central afterwards, I'd love to do that event again because it was well done. You know this, you get involved with events and you're just sitting there saying, please get this over with. This is a train wreck. This is a disaster.
Right.
It's all for a good cause. I get it, but I don't want any part of this. And then there's ones that you do that you say, this is well done. This is well produced. Mm-hmm. This is for the right reasons, which is what I heard from coaches last night and kids today, last night. I've had a ton of feedback on it. It's all been good. So I'd love to do it again next year. I thought it was great. It's needed in the community. So that's what my thing is. So,
absolutely. And that's the same thing. Some of the people that were involved, coaches, athletes types, I've heard the same thing. They just felt like it was done tastefully and for, like you said, for the right reasons. So I'm really excited for our involvement with that.
Yeah. All right. Stay well. Good visiting with you. See you.
All right, Brad. Good talking to you.
There's Paula Bova, News and Notes, AZ Central Sports columnist. Yeah, almost face planted. I'm going to get into the Warner thing on the other side, and then the Ariel Helwani story. I want to get into that. Jordan brought that to my attention over the weekend, too. That's next. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. I'm Brad Sussman. Stories before we get out of here. And Jordan sent me a text on Saturday. We actually, Jordan may take more days off than Eric, but he actually was working Saturday in some way, shape, or form. About this Ariel Helwani story, and anytime that it involves, and this is going to tick off some of you, but UFC and Dana White, Dana White is all about attention. That's what he is. And so when I heard that he pulled a credential and moved out a photographer and his whole group, MMA reporter Ariel Helwani, which is, and Jordan, you jump in on this one. So this is the equivalent of Adam Schefter, Peter King being told, you're gone and we're never going to give you another credential. Correct?
Yeah, he's one of the premier guys for UFC, MMA, kind of got his start with Fox and then eventually moved over to some other endeavors. But yeah, he's one of the premier guys.
So the UFC is saying this morning that a representative for Dana White said that they're upset that he didn't call for comment before publishing the news that Brock Lesnar was coming back, which is a big, big story. It's a big story, and it's going to create huge social media buzz. I saw Brock Lesnar on SportsCenter this morning. So the way this usually works, guys, is dots are connected. Somebody's going to say, yeah, we'll give you this story, and you're going to get all the social media and all the money off of it. And for a guy to tip it and get it on his website first, that's how I see this. I could be wrong. Dana White said, as long as I'm here, he will never get another credential. Would he be allowed to attend UFC 200 if he bought a ticket? Dana White replied, yes. He can cover all the events he wants. He just can't have a credential, which means he can't go behind the curtain. He can't go behind the scenes. He'd have to sit out. It'd be like sitting out in left field at a baseball game, but you can never go into a dugout. Here's the thing. In this day and age, media has changed so much, you can actually do that. Because you can just develop the relationship with the player or the personality. You just send them a text. They tell you what's going on. You can go sit in left field. You can go sit in the upper deck. Because you're not getting much out of teams anyways anymore. So this seems to me, Jordan, to be about Dana White wanting more attention on something. He may have been pissed off that he got scooped on a story, or actually his company got scooped, and they may have handed the story to another company, and some money may have been lost. I don't know that.
Are
you reading this the same way?
Yeah, I think a lot of it is the attention and also just control. You know, the UFC is still relatively in its infancy. It's still developing and that sort of thing. Obviously, it's blown up over the past 5 or 6 years. But they want all the control on that. So, the credential was physically taken away from him, as well as two of his fellow a photographer and a video director who Helwani is claiming did absolutely nothing. They weren't a part of the scoop or anything like that, but just being associated with him, they were taken out as well.
Okay, so this is from a journalist standpoint, just in our industry, yeah, there's some concern here, but I think I'm looking at it as Don King. Dana White is the modern day Don King and Bob Arum. Anything to bring interest to your sport. And it's a huge sport. Okay, they don't need to necessarily do this. So I'm not all that worked up about it. If this started happening in the NFL or the NBA, sure. But I think this is par for the course. Kurt Warner. So again, Jordan sends me this link to this text. Did you do anything except work this weekend? I mean,
not really. No.
Well, I'm struggling for a show today. So this one, Kurt Warner puts on Twitter, my son, Cade Warner, leads State of Arizona in receptions last year. Today he attended U of A football camp and doesn't get a single one-on-one rep? Question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark. Hashtag bear let down. Bear let down. Then he sends out another tweet a short time later. Spent my entire life being looked over for more talented, quote unquote, talented guys. Never upset me nearly as much as watching it happen to my son. So there's a few things here. I would look at Kurt. You can look at this two ways. You're a dad. You're really concerned about your kid. You decide to go on social media and to express your views. In Kurt's case, he's bringing up something that is pervasive. I'm not down at that camp. Okay, I'm not down there. But some of these camps, and in fact, quite a few of these, what I hear, when guys pay money to go to these camps, and they're just like, yeah, okay, whatever. You're just another number. In Kurt's case, it's, look, this kid over here was the leading receiver in the state. You might want to take a closer look at him and put him in some one-on-ones. I can see that side of the story. The other side of the story, and I had this texted me and actually some coaches last night that said, I'm really disappointed he would take that tact. And, you know, you don't need to go out there and socially do something. But he raised awareness. There's a give and take on this. I know about Cade Warner just because it's Kurt's kid. And I also look at who is leading in receptions. Does this mean he's not going to go to the U of A? Does it mean that I had some ASU people text me, fans, that said, we will make sure that Coach Graham knows that Cade Warner is going to be there and throw to Cade. And, you know, so whatever. So it turned into ASU against U of A. Of course it did. Put the phone down. There are times where you take this little device, and this is a Lamborghini, and you want to put something out there, and you really shouldn't put it down. But Kurt clearly stirred it up and caused debate because it comes across as my kid is that's my son. It's Kurt Warner's son. He should be given some attention. That's how it came across to most people, fairly or unfairly.
Well, and now 2 hours after he sent that tweet, he sent another one that said, those that thought my last tweet was simply about my son and one school, you're missing point, just a voice for the voiceless.
No, that's right. That's right. He is right on that. He is right on that because he's raised this today. And this will pick up, I think this story will pick up more steam as the day goes along too. I really do. There's two college football stories today. There's that one with Kurt and the social media side. And then Michigan and Alabama today working at the exact same satellite camp. I think all of us as sports fans, somebody just get Michigan and Alabama together and schedule at neutral site. What is halfway between Michigan and Alabama? If it's St. Louis, go to St. Louis. If it's got to be a city that's not Big Ten or SEC, okay? Yeah, St. Louis is close to Missouri, which is SEC. I get it. But find some place for the two to go. Go play in New York City. Go play in Hawaii, and they will sell gobs of tickets, and they'll have unbelievable ratings because Harbaugh and Saban don't like each other. It's very clear that Harbaugh is just this little pin underneath the fingernail. That's all he's going to be. Sports360AZ.com. We partner with the Arizona Republic, AZ Central Sports. There's plenty of content up on our website right now, sports360AZ.com. We're Arizona centric. Things that we see on the pro, college, high school front, a little different. People out there that we see that not everybody can be every place. Have a great staff. We've been at it almost 5 years now. A lot of fun. We do partner with AZ Central Sports. Appreciate that partnership. I'm Brad Sussmat. Enjoy your Monday.